Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you? Welcome to Stuff Mom Never Told You from HowStuffWorks.com. Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Kristen.
And I'm Caroline.
Caroline, since it is the height of summer right now and folks are taken to the pools, I thought it'd be a good time to talk about mermaids.
Do you keep mermaids in your pool?
I wish I had mermaids in my pool. Well, I wish I had a pool to begin with. I don't actually have a pool. I have to bum pools off other people. I'm a pool scavenger. But while I don't keep mermaids in my pool, I did as a child play mermaid.
I did
at
too.
At the pool. Were you good at that? Did you have like the, you know, the dolphin dive and
yeah, it
like
really
that?
Just involved my butt sticking up above the water and the lifeguards laughing at me.
Sounds like how I swim now. and we probably played mermaid a lot because the Little Mermaid was so popular.
Yeah.
Growing up.
The cartoon prince, I think, was one of my first crushes. Eric.
Oh, yeah. Eric was very handsome.
Eric the Prince for a two-dimensional character. I've dated some two-dimensional people, though.
So. Well, I think we should note that Hans Christian Andersen, of course, wrote The Little Mermaid in 1836. But mermaid mythology goes back a long, long time.
Yeah, Pliny the Elder, in the first century AD, he was convinced that mermaids existed, and he described them, and actually his text was one that people sort of relied on for hundreds of years. So then going forward to the 5th century, there was a Greek work that I can't pronounce.
Physiologus?
Sure, that one. It was all about animals, it was all-encompassing, and it was so all-encompassing that it included fake ones.
Like mermaids?
Like the mermaid, yeah. And the description of mermaids starts out really good. Really, okay. Really nice.
Let's hear it.
And it devolves. Okay, let's see. They described a mermaid as a beast of the sea, wonderfully shapen as a maid from the navel upward and a fish from the navel downward. And it's okay so far.
Yeah.
And then they say, and this beast is glad and merry in tempest and staid and heavy in fair weather.
So kind of moody. Mermaids are really moody.
Jerks. Jerks of the sea.
Well, it's interesting because Professor Anthony Piccolo of Manhattanville College thinks that this mercurial mermaid nature might have been developed later by Christian writers. For instance, in the 13th century, we have a monk who wrote that while mermaids did charm sailors, they are also, and this is a quote, strong whores. Who led men astray.
Dang.
Well, it sounds like the sirens in Homer's Odyssey. Even though the sirens are actually winged women of the sea, we typically associate them with mermaids.
Right. Luring men to their deaths.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, just blame it on the women. Yeah, sure. You wreck your ship? Yeah, just blame it on the women.
Yeah.
With the tails. Why not?
I thought this was an interesting tidbit as well, just to show how pervasive this mermaid mythology is. 1483, the Nuremberg Bible shows a mermaid and a mer dog. I like that, a mer dog.
Everybody likes pets.
Swimming near Noah's Ark.
Yeah, well, I guess they got left behind with the unicorns.
Yeah.
And the dinosaurs.
Noah's unicorns. Mermaid mythology is also very prevalent in African cultures as well. And some scholars think that this might have to do with ships in the 1500s coming over to Africa with the mermaids on their prows, like statues of mermaids. And maybe there was some kind of, you know, sort of mythology mix up that started to happen because there were always these water spirits among African mythology, such as the Mamiwata, which is one of the most powerful African water spirits, and she's often portrayed as a mermaid. So they wonder if maybe the water spirits somehow like evolved into these mermaid-like creatures. And then in the Caribbean, we get Lacerin, who's a mermaid water spirit as well. And then in Inuit lore, we have a Sedna, who is depicted as a mermaid. And Sedna has a really sad story. Basically, she's this girl who just had a really rough time, and her fingers and toes ended up being cut off.
Her dad cut them off.
Yeah, at first her dad tried to like help her out, and then there was a rainstorm, and he was like, "Get out of my boat, Sedna! I'm gonna cut off your fingers."
Yeah, it was kind of like the reverse of Titanic.
Yeah, he was like throwing her overboard. So she lives in the sea, and
yeah, her fingers became the whales and the seals.
That's kind of cute.
Yeah. She must have had giant fingers.
Very large ones. And then we have Aboriginal tribes in Australia who would speak of ancient water spirits called yok yoks that also look like mermaids. So dotted around the globe. How fascinating is this? We have mermaids. It's not just Copenhagen, the little mermaid stealing all the mermaid thunder.
No.
No, no.
We've got a lot of water legends.
Yes, yok yoks and mommy watas.
Yes. Everywhere. It's my next band name.
So while all this mythology developed, there were also a lot of supposed mermaid sightings.
Yeah, people like Christopher Columbus filled their heads with too many fairy tales, maybe. And also they were a little bit lonely on the ocean. And in 1493, around the time that Columbus bumped into what is now America, he reported seeing three mermaids, and he wrote, "They're not as beautiful as they are represented," which is probably true when you take into account that what he saw were likely manatees.
Yes.
Hello, I'm a manatee. Yeah, no, not beautiful. No.
Maybe in their own way beautiful.
But I mean, I would like to hug a manatee. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
But I hear that they smell.
And they don't really look like, you know, if you think about Ariel, you know, with the seashell bra and the flowing hair.
Yeah, so we don't know that manatees many years ago did not wear seashells, but
this is true. Oh man, I've got some follow-up research to do when I get back to my desk after this podcast. Then we have in 1608, English explorer Henry Hudson sailing off the coast of Russia when he reported seeing a mermaid by his ship. And oh wait, but what do you know? Its tail was that of a porpoise. So
yeah, I would just assume that he was a drunk sailor. But he actually got some backup, granted, you know, 200 years later, by a biologist, P.H. Goss, who said the sailors were too experienced to have mistaken a seal or dolphin for a mermaid. So naturally, they had to be right.
Could he be a drunk biologist, maybe?
Absolutely. Do you know a sober biologist?
And then in the 1700s, Christian missionaries in Africa claimed that Angolans were catching and eating mermaids, but they weren't the only ones.
Right. In 1739, apparently mermaid meat is in high demand.
Yeah.
A Scottish publication reported that the crew of a ship sailing in the Caribbean ran low on supplies, and so to supplement their diets, they caught and ate mermaids and said that they tasted like veal.
Really?
I am hungry.
Mermaids taste like veal. And we would, of course, be remiss to not mention the Fiji mermaid. This was probably the greatest hoax, mermaid hoax, ever carried out. And, of course, the guy behind it was none other than P.T. Barnum.
What a huckster.
Oh, huckster Barnum. This is in 1842. P.T. Barnum somehow gets his hands on what is the top half of a monkey and the tail of a fish sewn together. And it is gross. You can seriously Google image Fiji mermaid, and it is, oof, it's a nasty little creature.
Well, apparently there were actually a lot of them, well, floating around, so to speak. Apparently a lot of people were making these.
These fake mermaids.
These fake mermaids and selling them to tourists and sailors. And so they just sort of got into the market somehow.
Yeah. It was basically supposed to be like the archaeological remains of this haggard mermaid. And it became this huge tourist attraction that he displayed at his museum in New York. But he used a great marketing tactic, which was to have a poster advertising these three gorgeous, very traditional mermaids, like, come inside, come see these lovely dames of the sea. And then you go in, you pay your dime and nickel, and you go and you see this haggard,
this horrific
mermaid with these snaggle teeth and claws. Ugh.
Yeah.
But people were still...
Yeah, they paid money. I mean, what did they have to do back then? There were no podcasts.
No. All they had were those pianos that played themselves. Right?
Yes.
That's as good as it got. So we have all these mermaid sightings, and there was even up in, I think it was reported in Live Science in 2009, supposedly there were some mermaid sightings in Israel. They still pop up every now and then, which I find pretty fascinating. People want to see. It's like
people
the Loch
still
Ness
drink.
Monster. Well, it's kind of like the Loch Ness Monster. We want to believe in mermaids. I mean, you and I maybe wanted to when we were kicking our little butts up out of the pool.
trying to
swim like mermaids. We found some pretty great stories of real life mermaids.
Mm-hmm.
Like these are women who really identify with the mermaid life and have even gone to great lengths to create fins with which to mer around. I just made up a verb.
To mer. Hannah Fraser took some money that she got when her grandmother passed and had a mermaid tail made, and she uses it to dive to great depths, holds her breath for a long time. But she also uses this image of herself that she's created as a mermaid to draw attention to ocean issues, such as dolphin hunting in Japan.
Yeah.
And she actually almost got killed by some fishermen. She claims that they tried to back up over her and some other people with their propellers.
I mean, it's tough out there for a mermaid.
Yeah,
come
man.
On. Well, then there's also the story of Nadia Vesey, who had both legs amputated at a young age, but she was able to enlist this special effects team to build a high-tech mermaid tail that took them 2 years to construct. And now in her 50s, she still she's able to swim out in the water with this crazy mermaid tail.
Yeah, and she says that adults seem more enchanted by it than children do. I wonder if just the kids are like, well, yeah, of course, mermaid.
That's a mermaid.
They exist.
Come on, Christopher Columbus saw them, so.
What manatees.
But Linda Wolbert, if only for her prize-winning quote, which we will read you, I think is my favorite real-life mermaid, because she's into it.
Yeah, Linda Wolbert actually, she also uses her mermaid alter ego to draw attention to a cause. She participates in Swim to Empower, which is a nonprofit that helps kids in the Bahamas learn to swim because they apparently have a really high drowning rate. And so she said, the magic of having a mermaid do it, you know, bring attention to these issues. It's almost like a unicorn trotting up and saying, would you like to learn how to ride horses?
I mean, yes. Yes, unicorn. I would like to ride on your back across a rainbow.
Holding your glittery mane.
But one more incredible fact about Linda Wolbert, she can hold her breath underwater for about 5 minutes.
Yeah, and she basically insinuates that you're a wuss if you can't, because she said, yeah, you just have to get over that uncomfortable feeling of being able to breathe.
Dying.
Yeah.
But the real life mermaids that we must talk about, and I wanted to save this for last, because you can't get any kitschier than Weeki Wachee.
Oh, yes.
The home of mermaids in Weeki Wachee, that's hard to say really fast, in Weeki Wachee, Florida. Take it away, Caroline.
I will.
I'm speechless.
Yeah, no, Newton Perry is a former Navy SEAL. So tough guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he started Weeki Wachee Springs. Apparently there were some natural springs with a lot of junk, like people just tossed refrigerators in or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
He cleared it out. He put up a sign in the road that said, you know, Weeki Wachee Springs. He hired some lovely bathing beauties and taught them how to breathe underwater using hoses.
This is in 1946. He opens up the Weeki Wachee attraction. And it was a huge tourist attraction, especially in the 60s. They would perform 8 shows a day to sell out crowds. And you can YouTube some great videos of vintage Weeki Wachee mermaid shows, because there was one I saw of it was like a newsreel type of thing, showing the beauties in training, the mermaids in training, and the narrator was like, look at the bathing beauties smiling underwater. It's incredible. I think it was in 1961, even Elvis visited, but he was all like, why didn't you build this like in New York instead of down here in Florida?
Well, there were no refrigerator springs.
Yeah.
New York, I guess.
But sadly, I mean, Weeki Wachee has been through some tough times, as you can imagine, with things like, oh, I don't know, Cirque du Soleil and it's underwater.
Or just television. I mean, I don't know. I don't really want to drive to Florida. But no, actually, in talking about this, I uncovered a repressed memory that I think my parents took me to Weeki Wachee when I was little.
Really?
Maybe, because I feel like we went to Disney World for a little bit, for a weekend, and maybe on the way back we stopped there, because I distinctly remember sitting in a theater that was built sort of below ground up against this giant glass plate under the spring or whatever. And I remember being so disappointed that the mermaids had to breathe through water hoses. I thought, fakes, you phonies.
Oh, you thought they should be able to just stand out there.
And I feel like someone even told me, you know, this is young Caroline, like 6 years old, that, oh, they're just practicing. They just need the hoses. If you come back next time, they won't use them.
And you were like, there will be no next time.
No.
Mm-mm. Mermaid hacks. Yeah, now, since I've been reading about all this mermaid stuff, I really want to watch Splash as soon as possible.
Done it. Don't need to do it again.
I was really hoping to just not do any research for this podcast except watch Splash and just see how it'd go.
I don't know. I have bad memories of that movie.
Tom Hanks and Daryl Hannah?
I guess. I mean, I liked the mermaid aspect of it when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I don't think I need to see it again.
Yeah, it was kind of, I was hoping to run across some kind of analysis, like feminist analysis of mermaids, you know, because, especially like, because Ariel is a great example of the impossible, body proportions that Disney will give their female
she
characters.
She also has a giant head.
She does have a lot of hair.
Yeah, she's got, her waist is like the size of a pencil, and then she's got this ginormous head propped up on her shoulders.
But maybe she's actually just a manatee.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Hello. I'm a manatee.
So yeah, if you all know any mermaids out there, any WikiWatchy fans listening, I'd like to hear from you.
And if anybody out there wants to defend mermaids against their whorish reputation, I'd like to hear that too.
Yes. Write us in with all of your mermaid thoughts. We hope you enjoyed this surprisingly robust mythology of mermaids.
Yeah.
Spans the globe. Who knew?
Who knew?
I did not know that.
Mm-mm.
And now I do. So anyway, if you would like to email us, our address is momstuff@howstuffworks.com. And in the meantime, I have just one email here to read today on our episode on whether women can be aggressive in dating.
Ooh, let's hear it.
So I've got a pretty detailed story here on a woman who wants to be anonymous, who asked a guy out, and it went wrong. So she says, I feel like women can't be aggressive in dating, especially in high school when there is so much stress put on social status, high school gossip, and keeping your ego and image intact. I thought that was a lot out of high school for me. There was this guy who I knew liked me and acted all confident around me when he was with his friends, but when it was just him, he got nervous and fidgety. So I finally approached him and talked to him directly, and then I did the worst thing you can do. I asked him if he'd like to hang out over Facebook message. Never ask someone to hang out over Facebook. I had no confidence and I sounded so awkward and pathetic. Anyway, when I mentioned it in person, he basically said, oh yeah, I've been busy with football, but maybe when it's over, I'll get back to you. I was so mad that he pulled the whole I'm such a cool jock that I'm busy being a hotshot and having girls love me from afar. It was so horribly embarrassing that I ignored him in my classes for the rest of the year. But once I stopped talking to him and avoided him, he suddenly liked me again and started being the aggressor. But I had lost all interest in him because of the humiliation I suffered from wanting to hang out with him in the first place. It seems like guys start to like you once you stop liking them and completely stop trying. It can be confusing.
Yeah.
For sure. For sure. So keep the stories of confusion and dating coming our way. It's momstuff@howstuffworks.com. You can also head over to Facebook and say hello and leave a comment and follow us on Twitter if you'd like. We're at momstuffpodcast. And then lastly, you can read our blog during the week. It's Stuff Mom Never Told You at howstuffworks.com.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join How Stuff Works staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow. The How Stuff Works iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?